Radio City Talks Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
Yeah, hello, it's Mental Health Monday. It's back for another week. My name's Mick and there's a really, really busy show ahead. So, speaking ahead of World Mental Health Day, we're going to be speaking to in a few moments' time a writer and a broadcaster who's really keen for people like me to say and do the right things when it comes to talking about mental health within the media. But we're going to have the conversation on air so you can get a sense as well about the use of language around mental health. Natasha Devon is putting together a mental health media charter and asking people to sign up, so we're going to hear all about that. Also on the show today, Prince Harry has been given a speech, and that speech is regarding mental health services within the armed forces. He's hoping a cultural change in the military will see better mental health support for those people who've served in the armed forces, with the help of a launch of a project between his Royal Foundation and the Ministry of Defence. So you'll hear the importance of mental health, particularly around people within the armed forces. That's on the way too. Plus, there is an organisation called the Kindfulness Cafe, and we'll be joined by some of the people who use that facility and hear about some of the great work that's done there locally as well. So it's a busy old show on Mental Health Monday. If you want to get involved on the programme today, you absolutely can. Just drop us an email, mick@radiocity.co.uk. Maybe you have your own organisation or you're doing your own work in regard to mental health. Email address is exactly the same, mick@radiocity.co.uk. Maybe you've got your own story and you want to share it in regard to your own mental health journey. Email address is absolutely the same. We'll be doing the show as, obviously, the live radio show now, but also available as a podcast. If you want to find out about that, simply type in Mental Health Monday podcast into your search engine or check out radiocitytalk.co.uk. It's a busy show, so let's crack on.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
This is Radio City Talk.
Okay, so it's Radio City Talk, Mental Health Monday. My name's Mick Coyle. I hope you're well. Our next guest is doing some fantastic work, touching on something we've mentioned on the show a few times, and that's about how we talk about mental health within the media. And I'm talking about using the right language, the right phrases, and the right terms. It's something we touched on last week with Angela Samata in regard to the phrase committing suicide and how maybe that's no longer the correct phrase to use. Joining us on the programme now is campaigner and writer Natasha Devon, MBE. Natasha, thank you for your time. Thanks for joining us. You're really doing something about this. You're getting the media to change the way they talk about mental health.
Well, I certainly hope so. I have a background in journalism myself. I had a column in Cosmopolitan magazine for 3 years. So I understand the challenges that journalists face when they're under the cosh, they've got to meet a deadline. So I've tried to make this as easy as possible for them by not only telling them what they shouldn't say, but also offering alternatives that they can swap in.
What's the number one mistake that people make and journalists make when they're using language around mental health?
I have to say that I think it's not understanding the distinction between mental illness and mental health, because we all have a mental health. Anyone with a brain has got a mental health. And so that then slips into, for example, saying things like the terrorist had mental health issues, which is like saying the terrorist was suffering from a cold at the time. It doesn't really tell us anything about what was going on with that person, but it does increase stigma.
I guess some journalists might say to you, well, we're trying to be more open-minded about this. We might be using the wrong language, but at least we're acknowledging that mental health actually exists. Is that a fair point?
I think it's brilliant the way that so many publications have grasped the nettle and tried to raise awareness. I'm just trying to help them to do that in the right way. I'm not trying to reprimand anyone. And I think this is more about encouraging good practice. And I haven't only called on the help of national charities, the Samaritans, BEAT, and also Mental Health First Aid England in order to compile these guidelines. I also ran a long-running social media campaign and invited either service users or their families to share the things that they found distressing about mental health reporting. And I don't think anybody wants their readers to be in distress.
No, absolutely. Is there anything then that maybe people have been doing using stock images, I don't know, from newspaper articles about mental health, particular phrases or headlines that get used? What sort of examples did you get back from people?
Well, the biggest thing was triggering images used for eating disorders and self-harm stories. So I think that a lot of editors believe that, for example, using a before and after photo on an anorexia story will act as a deterrent, whereas we know that because of the nature of the illness, that people can use it as something to aspire to, and it can actually have the opposite effect to the one that's intended. There was also something else which really divided people on social media. So it hasn't made it into the charter because some people were in favour, whereas other people hated them, which was the stock images of the head clutcher. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you know what? The head clutcher is the classic image, and it's often a female sort of crouched down almost in a fetal position, clutching the head. And it's often a slightly blurred image, so she cannot make her identity, which is essentially saying, look at this person who's in a time of distress.
Exactly. And some people said that that was exactly how they did look when they were in mental distress. So they didn't find it offensive, whereas other people really didn't like them. But because the audience were divided, I didn't put it in.
There's something in that, isn't there? If you ever watch or read local newspapers, there's that thing that they do, don't they, where they go, right, there's some people unhappy about this road. So they get a load of kids to look very grumpy on the side of a road. It's almost a laziness, isn't it? But it's like an institutionalized thing that people do.
And this is exactly what you hit on. It is laziness. You know, we slip into these turns of phrase and doing things because they're easy or because we've seen them before. And what I'm trying to do is change that for the better and change the narrative, because I don't think that there's any malice here. I don't think that people, for example, are trying to induce copycat behaviours in people who are vulnerable to self-harm, for example. I just think that they don't know any better. Because let's face it, you know, mental health has only really been on the agenda for a relatively short period of time, and people are still getting it right, which is completely understandable.
Now, the one that I mentioned right at the top of the interview was about committing suicide. Now, that is a phrase which for many will just roll off the tongue when they talk about, have you heard about such a thing? Committed suicide. It's become a really normal way of talking about it. As I mentioned, talking to Angela Sonata last week, she was saying, actually, if you think about the connotations of committing something, it's an act against the law. It's committing an offence. And I think from a legal point of view, it's 50 or 60 years since committing suicide, taking your own life as a commitment. It was actually a phrase which was in real legal use. What do people say now instead? What do you say now instead, Natasha?
My preferred term is ended their own life. Some people say took their own life. I don't like that particularly because it still suggests that it doesn't belong to them. You know, your life belongs to you, doesn't it, ultimately? I even think that kill themselves is better. It's very blunt, but it is also a neutral description. You're not applying any kind of judgment. You're just saying what happened.
Yeah, and the other thing, and Angela mentioned this last week, people can listen back to last week's show, she talked about it was a successful suicide attempt. Which is, again, it has its own connotations, doesn't it?
Yeah, I really hate that one. I don't mind completed. You know, some people say either attempted or completed suicide. That's okay, although it sounds a little bit clinical. But yes, we should never be talking about a successful suicide. Not just because it kind of glamorizes it, but also because it's erroneous. You know, all the evidence shows that people who are suicidal are ambivalent. Part of them wants to live. And so we shouldn't call it a success when that, you know, is always salvageable. There was always a chance to help that person.
Now, in terms of the charter itself and the media doing the right things, for people who are sort of in and around the mental health community, they'll absolutely understand what you're saying there. Is there ever a danger? Do you think there might be a danger that sometimes by saying, oh, don't say that around suicide, don't use that particular phrase or language, it might put anyone off actually talking about it in the first place? Because they're thinking, oh, I don't want to say the wrong thing. I don't want to make a mistake while talking about mental health.
Well, this is why I've made it as easy as possible for anybody that wants to sign up by suggesting better ways of talking about it and getting it right. So, and of course, you're going to slip up. I mean, I've actually put at the beginning of the charter, I will do my best to, or we will do our best to. So this isn't set in stone. There's not going to be legal repercussions if you don't get it right. This is more, I will make my best effort to try and frame it in a positive way. And I know that there will be some people who will talk about freedom of speech, but I think freedom of speech only really is an applicable argument if you understand the full impact of the words that you're currently using. And I just don't think that a lot of people do. And in a lot of ways, this campaign is as much to make people think about what they're saying and be aware of the times when perhaps other people are getting it wrong, or when they see something written in a magazine article, for example, is to make them aware as much as it is to induce that change.
On social media, on this one, you're using the hashtag Mental Health Media Charter. If people are listening to this, maybe they're bloggers. Everyone's a broadcaster now, aren't they? You know, people have got their own Facebook pages and everything in between. It might write for a local paper. How do people read it, find out the information, and sign up and declare that they are part of the Mental Health Media Charter?
So I'm setting up a Twitter account, which is MH Media Charter, and all the information will be on there. And also you can go to my website, which is natashadevon.com, if you want to have a copy of the charter and sign up to it. If you do sign up to it, you'll get a specially designed stamp of approval for your social media and website. And it's been designed by Ruby Etc., who, if you look her up on Instagram, is a fantastic illustrator that illustrates about mental health. And she's very funny, which I think it's important that we retain a sense of humour in these conversations. So I recommend looking her up as well.
I need one of these. If I do make mistakes, she said, you know, you're not going to send around a lynch mob for me, but is it okay to make mistakes?
I think that inevitably we will make mistakes, and it may very well be that in 5 years' time, some of the things that I've said in the charter are no longer considered appropriate. That's the thing about language and values and social attitudes. They change and they evolve, and usually for the better. You know, there's this big backlash against political correctness in this country, but let's not forget that the aim of political correctness is to make people feel comfortable, welcome, embraced, and not judged, and all of those are really positive things. So this is an ongoing thing. It may very well be that I go back and amend it at some point. And remember, this is an ongoing campaign as well. I really want people to follow the Twitter account, to use the hashtag and keep it going 365 days of the year, not just for World Mental Health Day.
Absolutely. I love being politically correct. I always think you can't be politically correct without being first and foremost correct.
Exactly.
The clues are all there. So people want to find out more on social media, MH Media Charter or natashadevon.com. If you want to sign up, have a read through it, get the nuance of it as well. And we'll do our best to actually, follow the rules as best we can here on Mental Health Monday. Also, the stamp of approval as well will make my social media look better as well, I think. So anything that boosts your social media's street cred is great news, Natasha. Thank you for your time today. Great work that you've done on this one. We look for maybe having a catch up in a year's time, find out what kind of mistakes maybe newspapers or TV reporters, radio reporters, mistakes that I've made in the previous 12 months, and maybe how things are moving on for years to come.
Thank you so much for having me.
Brilliant stuff. Natasha Devon, MBE, the Mental Health Media Charter, natashadevon.com, all the information, or at MH Media Charter. We'll get a link on our social media too.
Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk. Tackling the stigma.
Great to get Natasha on the programme. Right, we've got a group of people who are coming on the show in a few moments' time who are going to talk about the great work they do through the Kindfulness Cafe. But today, Prince Harry has given a big speech in which he's talking about a cultural change in the military, hoping to see better mental health support for the armed forces. He's helped launch a project between his Royal Foundation and today the Ministry of Defence. Let's take a listen to it, because he says helping soldiers with mental health conditions will have positive results.
My 10 years in the army taught me a great deal. I learned about the true meaning of service, duty, resilience, and dedication. But in many ways, I've learned more about the sacrifices that our servicemen and women make for us all since I left the army and continued my work with the Invictus Games. Having a step back from day-to-day army life has allowed me to think carefully about how we prepare, support, and care for those who wear the uniform. Each one of our servicemen and women is carefully selected, highly trained and rigorously tested. A huge amount of time, energy and resources is invested in each person to make them the very best that they can be. As the overall numbers of active duty personnel have reduced, we are naturally placing a premium on every individual being fighting fit and deployable. Quite simply, these men and women are prized assets which need to be continually invested in. We surely have to think of them as high-performance athletes carrying all their kit, equipment, and a rifle. Crucially, fighting fitness is not just about physical fitness. It is just as much about mental fitness too. Elite sports people now focus heavily on their mental approach to training and competing. They know that a perfectly fit body cannot win on the court, on the field, in the ring, or on the track if the mind is not focused. We have all seen professional athletes lose races or matches due to unforced errors. It is no different for anyone in high-pressure roles. During my time in the Army, I saw how important physical conditioning was and how we always warmed up before every run or loaded march to reduce the risk of injury. We should have the same approach to conditioning our mental health too. The military has faced the challenge of dealing with things like post-traumatic stress, anxiety, and depression. But like many of you in this room, I've come to realize that we can all do more to promote the positive management of our mental health, and in doing so, help prevent some of these issues before they develop. This is what the partnership between the MOD and the Royal Foundation is all about: placing mental fitness and mental health at the heart of the training and support provided to the entire defence community. The Royal Foundation has built up strong relationships in this space through our work with the Invictus Games, Contact, the Endeavour Fund, and Heads Together. I'm delighted that we are now going to make the most of what we have learned, and working with the MOD fundamentally changed the conversation on mental health inside the military. This isn't just about what to do when one of our friends isn't themselves. It's about what we do to help each other stay mentally and emotionally sharp, getting that extra 20 or possibly 30% more of performance. That can make all the difference. This isn't just about the support we must provide for veterans with mental health challenges. It's about providing tools and information that will help everyone in the defence community to get ahead of some of these problems before they start. And it isn't just about the vital work to challenge stigma around mental health in our armed forces. It is about showing everyone the amazing advantages we will all enjoy from training our minds as well as our bodies. We should be bold about the goals that we set ourselves. I see no reason that this partnership cannot be part of a cultural change around mental health that could lead to more servicemen and women feeling resilient in the face of unforeseen circumstances, both on and off the battlefield. Fewer medical discharges as a result of our commitment to preventative mental health care. And a more confident, focused, and ultimately more combat-ready military. What we are talking about is creating fundamentally better soldiers and staff to support them. Throughout our training, we develop a mindset which will not let weakness take over. We are taught to push ourselves through pain barriers to achieve what we thought was impossible. For too long, acknowledging emotion or challenging thoughts was seen as counterproductive to the fundamental characteristics of the armed forces. Today, we are saying that taking mental health seriously is what professional and dedicated servicemen and women must do to be above the rest and leading from the front. I'm incredibly excited about what we're going to achieve.
Yeah, as Prince Harry speaking a little bit earlier on today, hoping for a cultural change in the military, saying if you have better mental health, better physical health, you get better soldiers. He's got a new project working between the Royal Foundation and the Ministry of Defence. Bit of royalty there on Mental Health Monday. Mental Health Monday continues next.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
This is Radio City Talk.
Well, let's continue the conversation. We talk about mental health every Monday here on Radio City Talk because we think it's the right thing to do. And we also like to celebrate great work done by local organisations. So we're going to speak to now the team from the Kindfulness Coffee Club, who do some fantastic work. They're based up in Bootle, and we've got Mandy in the studio. Mandy Lutus, man, it's great to see you.
Thank you.
Just tell us about where you're based.
We're based on Knowsley Road, near Moore Street Doctors, if anybody's looking for us. Our tag at the moment on top is tea and empathy, which is really what we're all about.
Excellent. You had me at coffee. I was straight away. Coffee club, that'll do for me. Tell us why you were set up.
We were set up in response to, we were part of a bigger organisation. They set up a charity shop. People coming in because of the mental health bracket, asking for support, signposting. Knowsley Road's a very special area. There's not a lot of trust in official stuff, doctor's surgeries, social workers, everybody. It took us a little bit of time to get the confidence of the local community, but now that's what we're all about. Everybody's welcome. We do things differently there. There's no forms filling in or anything like that. And people can just come in and have a cup of tea. We connect with a lot of men, and that's because of the cafe side of it, I think. And then if people need to be signposted on to a more established type of thing, but we tend to try and look after each other, don't we?
Yeah, we've got one of the they call us service user, but
we
just
know
a
we're part of the family.
He's part of the
we
family.
Don't have service users.
Ian's here as well. Ian, at what point did you first step through the doors of the Kindfulness Cafe?
I've been suffering a lot of mental health issues and also bereavement of my beautiful wife who died 2.5 years ago. Loneliness was really getting to me, struggling. I've seen the words tea and empathy, and I know what empathy means, feeling someone else's pain. And I thought, it attracted me, that word. And the first day I walked in there, was made very welcome. I'll be honest, I cried the first day I opened up, and everyone was just so lovely in there. And since then, I get involved in ever as much as I can. And we're just like a big family, as Mandy said. The staff are amazing, the volunteers, the paid staff, the people who run it, the management. Even just people who suffer from loneliness go in, and there's so much going on. I feel so passionate about it. There should be more places like this.
So what was it? What is it about the environment that made you feel comfortable enough to open up?
It's informal. As Mandy said before, you know, there's no form filling in. There's no you haven't got to be referred by anyone. It's just like a big family, and the support's there, and it really does help.
I think it's because it's not like a doctor's surgery. You can just come in. We do get, I mean, Ian was very quick to react, but we do have people that come in, sit there maybe for 2 hours or 3 hours, and then eventually have the confidence to ask about one of the groups or kind of talk to somebody. Or we have people, I haven't spoken to a human being for 4 days. That shouldn't be happening. It really, really shouldn't. It doesn't cost nothing to share a cup of tea. And I think in a relaxed environment, we do a big thing on a Wednesday, walk and talk. And the things that out in the open, we only go to like Osterspool or Calderstones. When you're outside looking at the trees, people for some reason feel able to share a lot more about what the troubles are. And then we can either just hold the hand through what they're going through or engage with somebody else who's suffering the same type of like bereavement. We've got quite a few men that come in at the moment who've lost their wives, sadly. But to empathise with each other. I haven't lost my partner, thank God. But so I don't understand. I can put things in place to try and help. So that's what we're passionate about. We have a lot of groups that we don't have a group. We do things different. So if somebody comes in and says, I've got a problem or I'm suffering with this, we try then to set a group up around that because that's not the only person suffering.
Well, I was going to ask you about that because like the What Song Guide, you've got a ukulele group, you've got chair assisted yoga, you've got the walk and talk, games nights, aftercare group, you've got the knit and natter, the tech club, the craft club, the brunch club, the Friday night club, reflexology. So do you try and create those little environments where you almost think, well, come and have a reflexology session. You don't have to talk about your mental health if you don't want, but here's an environment where you will be allowed to and you can feel open to.
Yeah, it works both ways. You can either just engage with the group or say somebody comes to us and they're so depressed or all the staff volunteers are suicide prevention trained. We have a good relationship with Merseycare that offer us any training that's going. If somebody comes in very distressed and doesn't know where else to go, we'll say, well, have a little reflexology on us. I mean, we've got no money. We beg, steal and borrow for cash all the time. Because we're based around the cafe, we're not officially a charity, but we're a non-profit making organisation, basically. And we're just, that's what we are. There's nothing complicated about it. And every street corner should have one because it's the local community looking after the local community and trying to build bridges within that community in confidence and mental health. Like, we don't normally celebrate or recognise Mental Health Day because we recognise mental health every single day. It's not just about one day in the year, it's every day. And just to engage people, nobody should be lonely anymore. And because of the where we're based, we deal with a lot of other things. So we feed a kid for a quid and do a lot of stuff around that as well because of the financial state of the area is absolutely horrendous. So it's just a big, massive support to the local community.
It sounds like you're keeping busy.
Oh, yeah, just a bit.
Ian, let me ask you this. When you see people coming in the door for the first time, do you maybe recognise something of yourself in them and put your arm around them to get them in and explain what the cafe's about?
you know what, you've summed it up there, really. I have got a, even though I do struggle myself, it sounds strange, but I like to listen to other people's problems and I embrace them straight away and I just try and talk to them and they start opening up. It's amazing what, you know, how you can gain that person's trust and confidentiality and become friends. And we also do good meals and a good cup of tea and coffee in there as well. So that really helps, you know. It's I've never known, I don't know anywhere in the whole Liverpool that actually does this. And I know a certain political party were asking for this to be endorsed and to come into fruition maybe in the future. But it hasn't happened yet, but that's another story.
Well, I mean, but, you know, it just goes to show us all from what you're doing. You're not, you know, brain professors or anything like that. You're talking about opening your doors, engaging with people, talking to people, saying, how are you? What, you know, offering a bit of an insight into maybe somebody's life and giving them a bit of a pathway to walk down. This is it should be on every corner, but this is something which it could be on every corner, couldn't it?
Yeah, it's not complicated. It's not complicated at all. I'd also like to, we're not saying instead of, we're saying as well as. And sometimes because of the pressures on the NHS, we sometimes have people that are booked on to talking therapies, counselling and stuff. Because of the waiting list, the person's absolutely desperate to get the professional help, but there's nothing in between. So we're there just to try and sometimes hold somebody's hand, book them in on the reflexology, come for a walk, just until they can get the proper official help. And sometimes people don't even end up going for the official help because they get what they need from what we do. It's not rocket science. It's very simple.
But it's that thing, isn't it, about mental health? You mentioned World Mental Health Day, of course, right, that it's celebrated because it can give it a platform that people enjoy. But there's a difference. There's mental illness and there's mental health. And everyone has mental health. Other people might from time to time suffer from mental illness.
Yeah.
But actually, from what you've said therein, you know, that it was good for you just to go and find that environment, to be able to talk about how you were feeling, to make you feel a bit more comfortable maybe about how those feelings were moving around inside your head.
Totally. I mean, I have got mental illness. I've got borderline personality disorder, OCD, and other issues going on. But as Mandy said, it's not rocket science. It's just a little simple drop in. And also, I'd like to say that we can also, I mean, I'm not 100% saying about this because Mandy helps run the place. I just go there and sort of use it. I'm sure they can't access you to other agencies, am I correct?
Yeah. We signpost it. We've got good relationships with lots of people, lots of organisations in the area. Sometimes, like with the Alzheimer's Society, they say our local community try and work behind their own closed doors. They've had to learn to do things by themselves because of the lack of support that they've found. So we can phone Alzheimer's Society up and say, look, we've got somebody here. They won't go to your Form B memory clinic. Could you send somebody over or can you send someone for me? And they're very happy to come and help and support us because they're passionate about getting their information to the people that need it. And for whatever reason, the people in our area don't feel confident enough to reach out to go and get that information. So if we can get that information for them, that's great.
You seem very flexible in terms of how you work individually for people. I'm wondering if people say, hey, these cakes are no good, can you get some carrot cakes?
That's it. Yeah, we do that. Or you haven't had this for a while, can you put this on? I haven't had corned beef hash for ages, can you put that? Yeah, that's how we work.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
So what are the most popular of the events? Which ones are in terms of the number of people who might show
walk up? And talk's a massive one. Knit and Natter, we cannot move Knit and Natter. That's some groups move and some groups run for 6 weeks and it doesn't take off or it serves its purpose and we'll start something else. Something that I'm passionate about a little bit is the John Colin Worthington group. That's a child bereavement peer support group. Now that's only a very small group. We have some people come just for a few weeks and move on. But the people that go there every week, they've done two or three sessions of counselling. They say, you know, why they're sad. But what helps them most is to be in an environment where another person's gone through the same type of tragedy because that person understands more than I do or you do. And they say that that helps them more. And to see that, just I just love that. It's sad, but it's great because they're getting support that they wouldn't get in another environment.
And which one do you look forward to?
Walk and talk. And we have a games night. That could be anything from
snakes and ladders.
I actually can. And watching people's faces losing when they're going down the snake. Adults, so comical. And it's good therapy.
The Crafty Cards on a Monday night, that's a new group run by Nan, and there's a lot of laughter that goes, and that's very, very good. That's funny as well, and she's a very clever lady, isn't she?
Fantastic.
There's a great Twitter feed, Kindfulness, with a double L, double S, CC. That's at Kindfulness CC on Twitter, but the website, kindfulnesscoffeeclub.com. Kindfulnesscoffeeclub.com has got all the information and a breakdown of the what's on, and there's loads of stuff at different times of the week.
Yep.
If you don't find one you like on the Monday, try the Tuesday. There's always something there.
But if there's not on there and you want something to put us on, we try and put everything on. We try to meet everything,
Thank you for coming in. Just tell us about your T-shirt.
This is Big Brew. We support a Brew Monday back in January, the darkest day of the year, around suicide. So it's to do with Merseycare and us supporting the Big Brew.
Brilliant stuff. It says, hello, I work for Kindfulness Coffee Club. Need to talk. Great question. Thank you for talking with us today. Mandy Lutis from the Kindfulness Coffee Club. And great to get you on the programme as well. I appreciate you sharing your story here on Radio City Talk. So Mental Health Monday, that wraps us up for this week. If you want to get involved in the show, do drop us an email, mick@radiocity.co.uk. That's mick@radiocity.co.uk. And we could be talking about your story if you want to share it very soon here on the programme. Don't forget, the show will be available as a podcast a little bit later on today. You can share that via your social media and even rate it and like it on iTunes if you want. At least 3 stars will be absolutely ideal. It's Radio City Talk. Mental Health Monday's back next week.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
This is Radio City Talk.